to well in our bank. Over to you, ladies.
Thank you so much. My name is Phakamile Hlubi Majola. I'm the acting spokesperson for NUMSA. I am here with my colleague Sharon Mudiba from Research. Together we will be making the submission on behalf of NUMSA. Can I proceed? Will the presentation be put up, or we just proceed? Okay, thank you. For more than two decades, the workers' share of the national income has been going down, and the legacy of apartheid continues. All hard-won gains secured during the dark days of apartheid, or since the dark days of apartheid, are now under attack. The graph that we presented in our presentation on the first page speaks about how the national income is falling. The blue line represents the national wages going down in the whole economy, and the red line demonstrates how the national income has reduced in the private business sector. It is important to state that since the union of 1910 between English and Afrikaner capital, South Africa's capital accumulation strategy has been dependent on the super exploitation of black and African workers. The very formation of the ANC in 1912 was to challenge this exploitation. Its role was to deal fundamentally with the class question, which was a struggle to ensure that black people in general, and Africans in particular, form part of ownership and control of the economy as the only fundamental mechanism to change relations of production and uproot and destroy the racist structure of the economy in order to defeat racism in the country. The purpose was to do away with the centralization and concentration of wealth in the hands of white monopoly capital. NUMSA wants it to be on record that for the past two decades, the South African economy under the ANC government has not changed. In fact, the conditions of the working class and their families have worsened back to apartheid fault lines. And we view the current amendments as nothing less than a right-wing political onslaught which can be compared to Margaret Thatcher's attack on the working class in Britain in the 80s. The following are the experiences of the working class, which unfortunately the current amendments and bills are worsening. The adoption of the Washington Consensus by the ANC, as well as the neoliberal policies such as GEAR and the NDP, which liberalized trade, removed exchange controls, maintained high interest rates, as well as the pursuit of inflation targeting by the Reserve Bank, have led to plant closures and caused serious levels of deindustrialization. The working class has been on the receiving end in terms of job losses. All of this has been pursued in the context of globalization, basically doing two things. The effect of globalization is that it's prevented the democratic state from intervening directly in the economy on behalf of the working class and the poor. But at the same time, it's hollowed out the capacity of the state, replacing it with tenders that have destroyed the capacity of the state to create quality jobs that are paying a living wage. At the point of production, companies have adopted a Japanese-style lean production process, which is a tool to restructure the workplace. This has led to an increase in the workload, workers are overloaded, and this is called multi-skilling. They attack the hard-won gains of workers through outsourcing non-core production. They casualize workers. They introduce contract labor, where permanence in jobs is completely undermined, and workers are subjected to precarious conditions such as labor broking. The government has refused to ban labor brokers. Instead, it has decided to regulate them, and the precarious nature and exploitation that is experienced by workers continues. This is an issue that NUMSA has taken to court. We won at the Labor Appeals Court over this issue last year. However, employers have taken this decision to the Constitutional Court on review, and we're waiting for an outcome on this issue. But this is just another example of where government has failed workers. Instead of banning labor brokers, they regulated them, and workers continue to suffer gross exploitation in the industry. South Africa continues to lead globally in terms of inequality. The gap between ordinary workers and CEOs in 2010 was 1,728 times, and it has worsened since then. Furthermore, Oxfam confirmed in 2018 that 82% of the wealth generated last year went to the richest 1% of the global population, whilst the 3.7 billion people who make up the poorest half of the world saw no increase in their wealth. The macroeconomic policies and the NDP that have been pursued by the government have failed in the past two decades to stimulate economic growth. In fact, the Washington Consensus has been globally discredited. It has caused a deep capitalist global crisis. And in our country, this has led to economic recession, and all these policies have led to the country being downgraded, and it's worsened the conditions of the working class. Plants are closing, there are massive retrenchments, and in South Africa, for every person who has a job, that person supports 3 to 7 extended family members on their paycheck. Workers continue to be victims of the apartheid colonial wage, spending at least 40% of their wages on public transport. It is against this backdrop that NUMSA views the current labor amendment bills, the National Minimum Wage Bill, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act Bill, and the LRA Amendment Bill as not just a declaration of war and an attack against the working class, but as a device to worsen the conditions of organized labor and the working class in general. Therefore, NUMSA rejects the amendments to the labor bills. Such is the level of frustration amongst working class families that on Wednesday, Human Rights Day, 6,000 workers demonstrated through the streets of Johannesburg to register their anger and their discontent towards this government for attempting to attack their right to strike. This mobilization will continue and will culminate in a national general strike on the 25th of April as we continue to register our discontent with the state of affairs. Below is our submission on balloting before a strike. NUMSA rejects that the ANC government, led by the Department of Labor, should tamper with the constitutional right to strike. The introduction of balloting before a strike is nothing else but an imposition on the limitation on the right to strike. We are calling on the ANC government to stop this vicious attack against workers. The right to strike was a product of bitter battles against a racist nationalist party regime, and many workers died to secure such a victory. As NUMSA, we wanted to be on record that we view this as a declaration of war. We are left with no choice as workers but to resist and to fight back. We will leave no stone unturned in defending and protecting the constitutional right to strike. The government must abandon all their efforts to put limitations on the right to strike, including the unconstitutional requirement to take a ballot before workers can embark on a strike. Our response on the objectives on the Accord on Collective Bargaining and Industrial Action of Good Practice. NUMSA has always maintained its working class ideological clarity that the post-1994 corporatism regimes, such as the Labor Relations Act and NEDLAC, have been a good device to demobilize the working class. These structures have been used to co-opt the working class leadership, which is not vigilant. They've become institutions that are there to promote class harmony in a class-divided society. NUMSA is warning government, business, and co-opted leaders of trade union federations that workers are not fooled. They can see this class collaboration agenda, which is embedded in an objective in this accord, and we reject it with the contempt it deserves. We reject the Accord on Collective Bargaining and Industrial Action on the grounds that it places the blame for violence during strikes on workers. It is based on the racist assumption that African workers are violent, but it does not acknowledge the brutality of the capitalist system on the working class and the role it plays in brutalizing the working class and the poor. In essence, the code blames workers who are victims of a violent capitalist system, the same way that some sectors of society blame women for being victims of rape. For the past two decades, We had strikes where both business and labor discussed picketing rules that constitute a good practice during a strike. As NUMSA, we see absolutely no reason in the role for police during a strike. During the strike, the police must keep their distance. Our experience has been that where the police get involved, as they did in Marikana, the workers are either brutally massacred or assaulted. In fact, in most instances, it is the police who are often the reason that strikes become violent. As NUMSA, we are extremely angered that the ANC government has the guts to take away the constitutional right to strike, which is the last weapon that workers can use to defend themselves against conservative and brutal employers. The right to strike has been used to improve the benefits and conditions of workers. It is a tool to uproot the apartheid colonial wage and eradicate super exploitation of workers, which continues unabated in the South African economy. The women in farming articulated that position perfectly clearly when they expressed their conditions in the current dispensation. The national minimum wage, simultaneously with attacking the constitutional right to strike, is imposing and setting a terrible precedent in the interest of untransformed, racist employers by imposing a fake so-called national minimum wage, which is an insult to the majority of workers who are super exploited and oppressed across all sectors of the economy. Capitalism in South Africa grew and thrived off the back of the exploitation of black and African labor. There was a conscious decision that African labor can never be part of owning the economy. Their role is to build the economy, and they continue to be paid starvation wages even today. They will not be paid a living wage so that their dignity can be restored. My comrade will take over from here.
Thank you, Comrade Paramita. The workplace The workplace in 2 decades of our democracy remains completely untransformed and undemocratic. A majority of our workers continue to selflessly work for this economy and earning wages that are incapable of taking care of their families. Companies continue to make profits through the hard work and competitive quality production contributed through the hard work labor of our workers. The Freedom Charter made a clarion call and demanded that there shall be a national minimum wage that was meant to alleviate poverty and to guarantee a living wage for the population of South Africa. However, that has not materialized. A wage of 11 rand per hour for the EPWP workers, 18 rands per hour for farm workers, 15 rands for domestic workers, and then 20 rands hour for the rest of the economy is not a national minimum wage. NUMSA refuses to be hoodwinked by the Minister of Labour, who is using the sectoral determination to address the plight of vulnerable workers by defining the improvement of this group of workers as a national minimum wage. With no intention to review it annually or set mechanism that would protect the job security of these workers. We are of the view that if there was any intention to do this, the Minister of Labour and the policymakers would have set a clause that actually allows for an annual review, and we view this as a very serious offence to the lives of workers and their families. Continuing with the livelihood of farm workers and the vulnerable workers, domestic workers and the EPW, we've stated that these wages that they get would not be conducive to be set as a national minimum wage that actually addresses all the sector, because of this is how government is intending to implement these policies. National minimum wage should be premised on the absolute principle that government priorities must at all times be fundamentally geared towards reducing the triple-fold crisis of unemployment, poverty, and inequality.
Rather than offer farm workers the incredibly 18 rand minimum wages, government must put measures to which must restore the dignity of farm workers and advance the genuine national minimum wages of the sectors. Such measures should include farmers owning the land in which they work in, farm workers' right to form and join and organize into trade union must also be fully protected, and special measures must be undertaken for government to monitor this right, of which now CCMA, as they've also said, the farm workers have said, CCMA and also the DOL is actually failing to do such. In fact, the majority of them do not even know how to consult with this department, the levers of government, of course. Any national minimum wage for farm workers must take into account the full cost of production of the life of farm workers and their families, such as cost of food, clothes, housing, education, leisure, and health to restore dignity of these workers. On page 7, we've got a graph which we took from the work of the National Minimum Wage Research Institute, led by Dr. Isaac Gillard. I think this was also because of this work of the National Minimum Wage Review was started in 2013, 2014, somewhere there. But despite us being the majority union in the metal and industry sectors, which are the sectors that contribute immensely into the equation, we were not consulted. The process of NEDLAT did not take into account the majority union representing over 360 workers to come and make submissions into the national minimum wage and its frame structure. Despite us forming collective bargaining forums and also making sure that we strengthen the sectors, we were not consulted by this process. In fact, a minority sectors, of which some of them represent close to 300 workers, were made to be signing this, and some who are constantly trying to dissolve the issues of workers are now made to be the voices of the very same workers, and we are then very much upset by this process, and we think that government should actually be taking that into consideration before even trying to implement this as April as proposed. Or May, rather. The graph on page 7, members, I'm sure you've got the presentation in front of you, demonstrates that a lot of workers in many of the sectors are actually low-skilled workers. And most of them earn substantially less wages, and they are less likely to transition to high-wage work. Over 80% of those vulnerable workers earn below the poverty line. In fact, most of them work only 35 hours per week, which means that this national minimum wage would not even cover them because there is no clause in the proposal that also ensures that they are covered by the national minimum wage. It only classifies the ones that are earning 40 hours per week, that are working 40 hours per week. It is no submission that the ANC government is not just attacking workers by introducing the national minimum wage, but it has decided to side with the vicious, ruthless bosses who have been attacking all hard-won gains of workers. Such a move set a good precedent in the interest of bosses who have been demanding a downward variation of conditions. This time around, they have the democratically elected government speaking on their behalf. The very same government that is saying that they are proposing this minimum to protect the workers. And we've visibly seen that in last year's engineering and metal workers strike, negotiations where even before negotiations, workers were adamant that they will start negotiating at nothing but the 15 rands or the 20 rands that's actually proposed by government. And this is an industry whereby we've largely made significant progress, and most of our workers are actually at least above 4,000. But now we're being told that there would not be an increase. In fact, we ended up signing a 6% of which now with the VAT increase of 15 rands, you would imagine what's going to happen to these workers who spend almost 40% of all their salaries on transport and cannot even afford quality health care, including education for their children. If government was serious about the introduction of the national minimum wage, they would go sector by sector, company by company, mine by mine, factory by factory, and demand a full disclosure of annual financial profits and actual disclosure of salaries and bonuses of CEO versus the ordinary wages of workers. It is only in the theater of the results that a fair national minimum wage can be determined in South Africa. Government has refused to do that, but has also agreed to set a clause that would want unions and workers that are demanding a fair wage and better living conditions to go ballot company by company if they want to share their grievances on the living conditions. We are just wondering as to why is it that government did not deem it fit for the very same to be done on the proposal of a national minimum wages, for companies to also disclose their financial viability so that we can see as to whether which sectors can actually afford to remain on sectoral determination with significant gains that they had already made. And in fact, we are wondering why is it that the government cannot be looking into what CCMA and DOL role would be in trying to strengthen the loopholes that already exist in the sectoral determination. In fact, we know that most of this sector, through the proposal of the global value chain, some of these sectors have already been included in some of the strong sectors. For example, you've got the petrol attendants who are now forming part of MIPCO, the motor bargaining chambers. And these we know that are workers that were on 15 rands per annum. But by them now being put into the collective bargaining of motor, whenever we do negotiations, it's actually our starting point. That's where we start so that we can actually match them with the sector with which they service. So I'm just wondering as to why would DOL, CCMA, which is, and government not look into strengthening those kind of clauses. Challenges in the collective bargaining. Collective bargaining such as MIBC and MIPCO are under attack. The employers in this sector are constantly in courts trying to apply for exemptions and to frustrate the process of increasing wages. And the national minimum wage proposal has actually created that platform for them to continue doing such. Another clause that we thought that there should be clarification on is Section 32 amendment. NUMSA notes the proposed amendment to Section 32. It facilitates the extension of collective agreement properly reached by the majority party in the bargaining councils. What is unfortunate is that a lot of anxiety and misunderstanding were created by communication received from the Department of Labor, which incorrectly created the impression that Section 32(1) of the Act is also amended to create a situation where minority parties can request an extension of a collective agreement reached between the minority parties. It is entirely incorrect to contend, as some do. Okay, I'll just start that point. The problem with this amendment and this section, it explains the clause as though minority parties could be able to form a collective agreement. And we seek and we request that government should look into just strengthening that so that we all have the same understanding, because it does not help for us to go into negotiations when all of the parties, the stakeholders, have different understanding of what the clause really means. We want clarification as to whether the agreement would be between minority parties or it just has to be one majority party that would be in agreement with one minority party. Then, and it would also mean that government is certainly collapsing the current bargaining councils if it puts clauses like that. So we want clarification on that. We also want to put on record that we are consulting with some legal aspects to help us understand what these amendments mean. And at the moment, yeah, that's what we've been doing. What is to be done? We want the democratic elected government that has claimed to be representing workers and to be doing things in the interest of workers to speedily act on the following. The government must ban all labor brokers and all abusive, exploitative practices. They must guarantee a 45-hour work per week. They must abandon and guarantee that all shall be no limitation to the right to strike. They must ban employers from being able to use scrap labor during strikes. That is, when workers are there in demonstration trying to show the frustration, they put the lives of other workers in danger by allowing them in factories and saying to them, we will pay you a certain minimum. This means employers are actually taking advantage of the poverty in South Africa, and they're making a mockery out of the poverty of South Africa and the unemployment rate by disguising workers and as tools to be used when there's certain disagreement between those that have actually secured work through hard work and through hard work of the bargaining councils. We want government to also guarantee that there would be benefits like paid annual leave, sick leave, and maternity leave and paternity leave. In fact, when we see farm workers here trying to lobby and trying to discuss the frustration with the national minimum wage and with the processes, we just observe as unions to say that most of them are actually losing pay through just being here, because we know that there's no pay for such, or they've had to put sick leave forward, and they are not going to get paid for this day for the hours that they've lost today. We want government to abandon the current proposal of the national minimum wage and pave the way for a truly genuine living wage. In conclusion, history teaches us that one fundamental lesson: the working class shall always be victims of the ruling class unless they learn to see the class interest behind all phrases, proclamations, and political processes. This includes this public hearings and labor bills. In fact, we're wondering that the processes that have started in 2014 and the submissions that we've made in DOL in January and the continuation of constant public hearings, are they really being taken into consideration, or is it just a tick in the box kind of a practice? In our demand, we have sought to unearth the true class intention and origins of the public hearings. It is time to unite the working class behind the demand for a living wage and demand for the Freedom Charter, for they are inseparable. We thank you.
Thank you very much, Nomsa, for that presentation. We'll open up for deliberations from the committee members for any questions of clarity. I'm noting in. Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, ladies, for the presentation. I think it is revolutionary stuff. Much of the stuff we haven't dealt with, it is not within the purvey of the public hearings that was convened the past 2 days, but your concerns regarding balloting, it's a valid concern, and you're not the only organized union that have expressed concerns. As it was stated yesterday, is that balloting has always been, COSATU has stated and the other federations have stated that balloting has always been part of our labor regime, and the only difference is that it is now going to be secret. You know, as in the past we did ballot our members, and but it was not done in secret in some instances, in many instances. So your concern is noted. As far as your concerns regarding the Section 32 is concerned, I think what you've raised is fairly, it is something to take note of. I don't think that we have very different to some of the comments that we receive. And there were hardly any objections also raised by other formations with regard to Section 32. And then you also raised a number of other issues that we don't deal with it at this stage, but those are fairly important issues to you, and once we deliberate, some of it can, at a later stage, I suppose. So from my side, Madam Chair, you know, this is a different submission, provides a different perspective. It provokes a different kind of thought process, and we cannot dismiss it. We need to take it serious and take it into account in our deliberations of the bill. Thank you, Ms. Kruby, and Ma'am Takamile.
No, we are not done yet. I'll give you the opportunity to respond. Any other comments? Just from my side, I also want to welcome the presentation that has been made by yourself. And as being stated earlier to all the presenters, we are going to take into consideration all the views that has been expressed during our time of our deliberations. But just a question of clarity. You explain on page 9, the third paragraph, that part that you explained there, can I therefore, am I correct in the assumption when I read that paragraph that you indeed have other areas of concern that you didn't necessarily avail in your presentation? Whilst we've created this platform and the opportunity for you to raise your submissions, and that you prefer rather to raise it elsewhere, or am I totally wrong in that assumption? Because you mentioned there that you are not necessarily confined to what has been dealt with in NUMSA's submissions, nor should any of the submissions may be construed as limiting NUMSA's right to expand upon or amend any of its submissions. If my assumption is correct, then it's really unfortunate, because we are affording you the opportunity to raise all your concerns so that we take everything into consideration during our deliberations in ensuring that we factor everything in that we agree upon as the relevant parties during our final deliberations, and that can find expression in the final bill. So can you please respond on the questions of clarity? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of Section 32 and the paragraph that you mentioned there, what we are talking about is that, as we mentioned in our presentation, there was a lot of confusion around this bill, how it was articulated, particularly on the part of the Department of Labor. Even in interviews that were conducted nationally, the impression was created, and it was an incorrect impression as far as we are concerned, that the amendments envisaged would allow that only a majority on one side is required to conclude a bargaining council agreement. So when we speak about pursuing other avenues, we were saying that because even at that stage, even as we were making submissions, Chairperson, the confusion remained. And that's why we were saying that we don't want to be held necessarily by what we put here in case perhaps our understanding or interpretation of the Act is incorrect, perhaps its application is something else. But that is why the way that this issue was dealt with and discussed created a lot of problems, and that's why we felt it necessary to phrase it in that way. Secondly, what we are saying in that paragraph as well is that besides this platform of Parliament, which we have participated in, as well as the Department of Labor processes, as well as the other hearings that took place in the past, we are exercising our rights to pursue a legal challenge, or we are considering the possibility of pursuing a legal challenge on the basis of the proposed amendments. And that is what that paragraph speaks to. Now, also, with regards to the issue of balloting that the Honourable Member mentioned just now, first of all, I think before we go anywhere, it is very important that we stress our position as NUMSA. NUMSA's position is that we reject all the proposed amendments that have been put on the table. We are calling for them to be scrapped. That is our position. It is also NUMSA's position...
Sorry, ma'am. Can I just come in there before I lose this point? When you look at the paragraph, the third paragraph, you are stating there, based upon the aforesaid understanding, NUMSA accepts the proposed amendments to Section 32. So you now...
Based on the aforesaid, though, hence I said to Chairperson, we are not sure how this should be interpreted. There has been a lot of confusion. So we don't know what... So we are saying if it is based on what we think it is, we will accept it. But we would like clarity on what this exactly is and how it is going to be implemented, because it created a huge amount of confusion. Also, furthermore, we want to stress and reiterate that as a trade union, we are not opposed to a national minimum wage. The goal of a minimum wage is it has to deal with inequality and poverty. But the way that this minimum wage has been structured, it will never achieve that. There are no conditions in the proposal to stop the bosses, for example, from embarking on mass retrenchments on workers that earn more than 20 rand per hour. This was already a threat last year when we were in engineering talks, when we were negotiating with employers. So it is a huge worry for us how this process has unfolded, particularly because we even say here that if the state can make an imposition where they expect workers to ballot each and every member before going on a strike, we are demanding that before the state comes up with a figure on what is a national minimum wage, they need to go company by company, factory by factory, and make sure that they understand the turnover of each and every industry and sector so that we can arrive at what is a fair minimum wage. We do not believe that the way it has been, as it has been expressed in the National Minimum Wage Bill, that this is a fair wage. It doesn't even come close to being a living wage, and that is why we reject it. I think it's also very important that as NIMSA we must state that with regards to this process around the proposed changes to the labor legislation, we believe that the consultation around this has been far from adequate. Last year we heard, at the SONA, the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, spoke about how these labor bills were adopted by the labor partners at NEDLAC. Now, we know that only about 20% of the South African working population is represented by organized labor. These decisions are going to affect every single worker in South Africa. And yet our experience is that the majority of workers don't know what these bills are, what they mean, and how they're going to be affected. Their opinions have not been canvassed. There are dozens of organizations who participated in the Department of Labor process who were told, for example, that their submissions would automatically be considered by Parliament. We've been informed this week that Parliament was a separate process and that organizations needed to submit specifically to Parliament as a separate process. And for us, that's very worrying because we wonder whether the views of the general population are actually going to be reflected in the final bill. And that is why, as NUMSA, we remain very firm in the belief that these new proposals have not been designed with workers and their families in mind. They have been designed in order to please business and big business in particular. We can say this with confidence because some of us attended the CCMA workshop which was held last week, where Business Unity South Africa confirmed that the only reason that they supported the national minimum wage of 20 rand per hour as opposed to a monthly minimum wage is because it gives them as employers the power to manipulate hours and keep wages low, which undermines the purpose of what a national minimum wage is supposed to do.
Madam Chair, just to add, and also I think another point that we may want to stress with respect to consultative processes, the location of engagements should also be looked into. For example, this platform, say, for example, it's a separate platform from that of DOL and the other processes that have been we've been involved in. People cannot easily reach this kind of platform. So we are of the view that consultations should actually include the broader society and it should start in communities. That's also one point that can be looked at by government even before they try to do that. In that clause of Section 32.1, the reason why we stressed the legal process was also based on our experience with government that they tend to put dates of submission on enforcement. Before we came here, we were also assured that the minimum wage was going to be in effect on the 1st of May 2018. So hence we said that should this happen, we should be given the right. We actually have a right to continue with the legal process and engage with these things. I mean, we've seen it with the IPPs and how government is engaging on such matters, and in fact, we stopped them through interdicts. So we are just also making government aware that the unfair practices on workers would only be stopped by this kind of mobilization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies. I think that I just need to reiterate, you were not part of our presentations yesterday, unless I'm wrong. I didn't see you. Okay, I think I just need to reiterate, because during several presentations, the concern was raised that ordinary community members, the unemployed, the workers in general, were not properly consulted during this process. So I think it's going to be very unfair towards you if I don't emphasize what I've explained last night when we finished, because you need to be privy to the information that's at hand. So just for you to note that as this parliament or this portfolio committee, we received the directive from the president during the 2014 SONA for this committee to investigate the modalities of introducing a national minimum wage. So therefore, we took it up as this portfolio committee to start with workshops, which started on the 20th of August 2014 in this very same chamber, whereby we invited community members and we started with workshops towards public hearings. Whereby we started on the 7th of November in 2014, conducting public hearings across the length and breadth of our country in all the provinces. Some provinces, especially those vast provinces, we try to reach more than one area to try and get proper consultation or to hear from our ordinary members, the workers, the unemployed, what their views are. And we after our process of public hearings, as this portfolio committee, we compiled the report. So then it was then NEDLAG and it was the Department of Labor, different entities who also spearheaded the process. But in terms of this portfolio committee, that's the work that we've done. So after the process was concluded in NEDLAG, it was then sent back to us for our final deliberations. And we saw it fit to do another round of public hearings just to get, maybe there was something based on the economy or any other contributing factor which may have swayed the views that was expressed previously. Hence, we conducting this round of public hearings again. So I thought it's just going to be fair towards you to give you an insight of the background in terms of how we arrived at this stage. But for now, I would really like to thank you for making yourself available to engage us. And as I've clearly indicated, we will take into consideration your views expressed, your concerns during our discussions. To the members, as we are concluding with today's public hearings, I would like to remind you that we still going to proceed with our public hearings on Tuesday morning 9:30, the same venue, Old Assembly Chamber. And then after that round of public hearings on Tuesday, we would like to engage as the committee or the committee members on the way forward in terms of trying to finalize this issue. So for now, we're going to adjourn until Tuesday morning, 9:30, Old Assembly Chamber. Thank you very much for everyone's presence and your commitment and your participation today. I thank you.